Nia is Afshurdi. I'm going to be lecturing about cosmology for you for the next 5 days. Sorry. But you're going to have a 3-week course on cosmology review. So I'm going to be doing the first week. The second week will be by Hiranya Paris, who hasn't arrived yet, but will be here next week. And the third week will be by Parampreet Singh, who you'll get to meet if you haven't already. And so since I assume you're here, you want to learn everything very fast, I decided to summarize everything in one lecture. So I'm going to tell you everything about cosmology during the next 50 minutes. So now I understand that this is, might be a bit too fast. So if there's something that you don't understand, of course, you're welcome to ask questions. But otherwise, just write down whatever is puzzling to you. And then either you can ask over the following days or the following weeks, or you can just we can discuss them in person. But I strongly encourage you, if there is something that puzzles you, and there should be a lot of things, because I'm not really giving any background when I'm going to introduce all the subjects, just write it down and discuss it with me or the other lecturers in cosmology. Okay? Good. Ready? Set? There you are. So I'm going to give you a summary of modern cosmology with absolutely no equations. So, and the one thing that you're going to take away probably from this talk is how often I use the word dark. Because it turns out that the cosmologists are somehow fascinated with the word dark, and they tend to use it in most the disciplines that they work on. And then I'm going to tell you, so that has to do with what makes up the universe. So it turns out that most of what we know in the universe happens to be dark. The other interesting topic is cosmic history, our understanding of how the universe started and continued till today. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit about cosmic horizon. So these are the main three subjects that we're going to cover today and over the next 3 weeks. But let me start with mysteries. So these are the things that you cosmologists tend to find fascinating about the universe and have no real answers for. So the biggest mystery so far, and you might have heard about it in other lectures to date, is the mystery of Big Bang, which has to do with whether you can quantize gravity or understand physics when you reach Planck energy or Planck temperature. So this is the biggest mystery of all. Or you could say the deepest mystery. We have the least clue as to how to treat things as you get close to the Big Bang. The next one is inflation. It just happens after the Big Bang, suppose at least in our crude understanding of the universe. And I'm going to tell you what it refers to, but it's basically a period of, if you haven't heard of it so far, it's a period of exponential expansion in the history of the universe very early on, when the universe is very, very young. So the age of the universe, I think, is something like 10 to the minus 30-something seconds. So it's very, very short time scales, very, very high energies. And what's the physics behind it? We know that it must be there, or something like it must be there, but what's the physics that governs this? It's also a mystery. Dark matter, I guess most of you must have heard about it. It seems that most of the matter in the universe is not really ordinary baryons. A good fraction of it is so-called dark matter. We know it does gravitate, but we don't know what it's made of. Then even the ordinary matter in the universe, we're not really sure about how it behaves. These are called baryons or electrons and leptons, all the standard model particles that I guess the last lecture was about, how they work together to form galaxies and clusters of galaxies or stars, they are all mysteries. As you go to a smaller and smaller scales, the next mystery is when you form black holes, what happens inside of them and what's the future. Well, generally, the physics related to black hole entropy, the singularity at the center of black hole, that's the next one. That's also another mystery. And finally, in a sense, the most recent mystery that we found out about close to 10 years ago, is The Mystery of Dark Energy, which could be related to modification of Einstein gravity or to extra dimensions. But the dark energy has to do with the fact that the universe doesn't seem to be, seems to be accelerating today. So the expansion of the universe is not just slowing down, it is accelerating. So this is just, so these are the mysteries that you're going to hear about throughout the talk. And again, interrupt me whenever you feel there's something not clear. And I guess all of these are just, might sound like words or big words for you, but I'm going to try to clarify some of them over the next few minutes. So, now this is the pie chart that any of you who have sat at any cosmology class or cosmology lecture might have seen. But this is a good summary, a good executive summary of our current understanding of the universe. For some reason, the resolution hasn't come out very well here. So our best understanding of cosmology is actually, first of all, it's very new. It has shaped over the past 5 years. And second of all, it constitutes of very exotic types of matter. It seems that in our best understanding of the universe today, most of the energy of the universe, or most of the energy density of the universe, close to 70% of it, is made up of dark energy, component that is far different from anything else that we know in the universe. It has negative pressure. That's basically the thing that's exotic about it. And everything else we know in the universe has positive pressure. After that, close to 25% of the matter content of the universe is in the form of the dark matter. It is more normal in the sense that it doesn't it has a still positive pressure. But we have not, except for that, that it has positive but a small pressure, we don't know anything else about it. It doesn't seem to interact with anything that we know. And after dark energy, it's the biggest component that makes up our universe. Now, after that, so 70% dark energy, 25% dark matter. Ordinary matter is less than 4% of the density of the universe. So, and it's mostly in free hydrogen and helium in between galaxies. So these are also the things that mostly we don't see, actually. So because they are very dilute. They fill the whole space in between galaxies. They emit very little radiation. So we think it should be there, but we haven't been able to see them directly. Now, the thing that we do manage to see are stars that make up galaxies and clusters of galaxies. The mass in them, the energy density in them, is less than 0.5% of the energy density of the universe. So the visible universe is actually less than 0.5% of the total energy density. And there are other less abundant elements. There's neutrinos. It's comparable to a star density, actually, but it's very, very small fraction of the energy density of the universe. And there are heavy elements that make up planets and humans and comets, etc. That's a tiny, tiny fraction. It's 0.03%. So this is the makeup of our universe. It's mostly dark, and that's what I usually call the other 99%. So it's only less than a percent of the density of the universe is really visible. More than 99% of it is invisible to us. So that's the best understanding of cosmology, which is a dark cosmology. So this is a short summary of what we know about these different components. So there is the dark or vacuum energy, as you find it in different textbooks. So it's called vacuum energy because it's a kind of energy density that if vacuum had an energy density, it would look exactly like this. It has pressure, it has density, but the pressure is negative, the density. And that's the kind of behavior you expect from vacuum if it has an energy density. And it seems to have 70% of the energy density of the universe today. And the only way that you can see it is through its effect on acceleration of cosmic expansion. So the only reason that we believe it exists is that the universe, instead of slowing down its expansion, is speeding up its expansion. And gravity, regular gravity with regular matter, is attractive. So the expansion of the universe should slow down. In contrast, it seems to be speeding up. And that's where people then speculate that there must be a component, so-called dark energy, that is responsible for that. But what you need in order for that to happen is a negative pressure. So that's what's very exotic about dark energy in contrast to anything else that we know. Okay. So let me repeat. Please interrupt me if there's something that doesn't make sense to you. Now, what's very puzzling about dark energy is that you actually do expect vacuum energy from something like a standard model that Michael was talking about. However, the magnitude of vacuum energy, the actual size of the density of vacuum, is 60 orders of magnitude smaller than what the standard model predicts. So the predictions from a standard model of particle physics, if you work it out, you cannot do it exactly because there are ambiguities in it. But your best guess is 60 orders of magnitude larger than what you actually observed from cosmological observations. So that's you could say this is the biggest discrepancy between predictions and observations in theoretical physics, and it's known as the cosmological constant problem. The next mysterious component of the universe is dark matter. It's actually older than dark energy. We've known about its existence for the past 50 years or so, due to its gravitational effect on a structure formation. For example, in galaxies or in clusters of galaxies. So I may not get to talk much more about this, but the main mysteries about it is, I mean, mainly what is it? But is it some sort of particle or is something more exotic? And there are different competing models about it. And the other big mystery is that what it does on a smaller scales. Now, unlike dark energy, which has negative pressure, dark matter has zero or negligible pressure, so it can actually cluster on small scales. But we don't really know how it clusters on the very small scales, because we don't really understand its physics very well. But yet, it could be, if you want to ever detect dark matter, it's really important to understand how it clusters at the small scales, because if you directly detect dark matter, we really probe its small scale structure. So that's one mystery about dark matter. The baryons, as I said, is about 4 to 5%, and most of the baryons are invisible to us, as I said. And since they are invisible to us, we don't really know what they're doing. So what is their state? How are they distributed? So it's supposed to be somewhere in between galaxies, but we don't really know where. So. Okay, so that's the status of the, energy inventory of the universe. And the main mystery is about them. Now, let me tell you a little bit about our map making, or at least the different aspects of the cosmic mysteries and how matter is distributed on larger scales. So I'm not sure if this is the most appropriate thing, but this is how map of the universe looked like 2,000 years ago, almost, or 18 centuries ago. And this is from Ptolemy. So this is, let's see, whether this is going to go forward. Something's happening. Okay, so do you know this is the Earth, how it looks like? So the size of this is 10,000 kilometers, which is like 10 to the 9 centimeters. I guess this is night on this side, the other side is day. And the current map of the cosmos on the largest scale, so these are the old maps of the universe, that are 10 to the 9 centimeters. Now, this is a more new map of the universe on the scale of 10 to the 28 centimeters, so a factor 19 orders of magnitude bigger than the size of the Earth. So this is from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. And so this map is, as I said, 10 to 28 centimeter, which is about 1,000 megaparsecs across. And every point in it is a galaxy. And the color is the color of the galaxy. So the reason that there are these wedges in the map that are empty is that we haven't managed really to map in every single direction. So we are sitting at the center, but we only map around 20% of the sky. So that's why there are a lot of empty wedges in this. The wedges that are full, that those are the places that were actually mapped. And you see, as you go farther out, the density of this map decreases, which means that you can see fewer and fewer galaxies at farther and farther distances. As you see, this map gets diluter and diluter, and eventually it's completely dark in the edges. It's because you see fewer and fewer galaxies because they look less and less bright to us. So this is the map how the universe looks like on this scale. And it looks actually, it may not look very homogeneous to you, but it actually is very homogeneous if you account for the fact that you cannot, there are regions that you don't see. If you account for that, you actually can figure out that this is a very homogeneous distribution of matter. There are, of course, structures. You can see there are regions, there are like filaments that galaxies are sitting on. There are these so-called fingers of God. You see these things that are pointing towards the center. These are called fingers of God. And maybe we discuss that at some point. So there are some structures. But on a larger scale, this actually looks very homogeneous. Now, this is not the deepest map of the universe that we have. You can actually map an order of magnitude farther. This is the so-called cosmic microwave background. So, and the previous map that I showed you has a scale like this, a tenth smaller than this scale. Now, and this is done by Wilkinson microwave anisotropy probe. Now, it turns out that there is a sphere that you can actually map on this distance. You cannot see things closer or farther than that sphere, but really just that sphere. And that's where the universe first became transparent to photons. So distances farther from this is far into the past. The universe was so dense that photons couldn't propagate. Distances closer to us is late enough where the density of the universe is so small that photons can actually propagate freely without hitting anything. And that actually constitutes a surface for us. There is a surface, and this is a surface not just in a space. This is a surface in a space and time that photons actually basically propagate freely to us from that point. So here, the universe was opaque. Here, inside the sphere, the universe is transparent. So all the photons that have been couldn't actually propagate freely out here are actually propagating freely to us from this surface. And you actually scan, so basically that means that the map of the photons that you see on the sky is a map of the distribution of matter on this surface. And the interesting thing about this map is that what you see here, the blue regions are cold, the red regions are hot, but there is actually a uniform background of basically black body photons on top of this, which is very, very uniform, to one part in 10 to the 5. So what I'm showing here is actually the fluctuations on the uniform background. And these fluctuations are 10 to the minus 5, basically. So this distribution of photons is very, very uniform in the sky, except for these small, tiny, tiny fluctuations. And that's what's so amazing about our universe, that it seems to be so uniform on larger scales. To these fluctuations, you had to actually work very hard. It took people 40 years to actually detect these fluctuations. The uniform background of temperature, microwave radiation, was discovered back in the 60s. And these fluctuations were first discovered in the 90s. So this is the map of the universe on a scale that's 20 orders of magnitude bigger than Earth, and this is the deepest map of the universe that we have ever been able to make. And it turns out that we actually understand the statistical properties of these fluctuations very well. But let me, so this is a picture of just what I described to you in a space-time. So if you imagine a cartoon, a space-time diagram, where time is decreasing as you go farther back this direction. So at some very early time, you had Big Bang, and we don't know much about it, but it's just really a word. And at some point in time, the universe becomes transparent, so photons can propagate to us freely. So that happened around 400,000 years. That's when the last scattering basically happened. So universe is transparent to photons here. Before this time, it's been completely opaque to photons. And as I said, this surface is actually very uniform. So these fluctuations are 1 part in 10^5 in this cosmic microwave background. Now, the thing that's surprising about this is that the different points on this surface, if particles are started at the speed of light at Big Bang, moving away from each other, they actually didn't have time to thermalize or come into causal contact with each other. Only points that are about a degree apart, they had time to become thermalized or come in causal contact with each other. So it's a real mystery why all these separate points that are very far apart on the glass scattering surface, how come they have the same temperature? So I've plotted the fluctuations here, but as I said, there is a uniform temperature, which is very uniform to 1 part in 10^5. And it seems that just if everything has started from the Big Bang, there wasn't enough time for these different, all these points to come into causal contact with each other. So this is one of the first and deepest mysteries in the cosmology, that why is the universe so homogeneous, especially when you look at the last scattering surface, when there wasn't much time from the Big Bang for different points to come in causal contact. And this is known as the horizon problem. So the size of the horizon is basically this big if you start from the Big Bang. But then you see everything on this larger scale to be uniform to a very, very accurate degree. So that's the so-called horizon problem. And that's the mystery. Why is CMB so isotropic? So does this picture make sense? So as I said, so the picture is that you look at every direction in the sky, and you see a cosmic microwave background that's very uniform. But then it seems that if our picture is correct, that it is from this 400,000 years ago that these photons are coming from, there wasn't enough time for different directions to come in thermal equilibrium. So that's the biggest mystery. And that's the puzzle that inflation, which I mentioned before, tried to solve. So this is a theory which, as I mentioned, assumed that at some very early phase of the universe, when the universe was 10^-35 second old, there was a very short period of exponential expansion that expanded the size of the universe by at least 20 orders of magnitude. So from something basically by a factor of 10^20. And this is called 60E foldings, basically. So if universe is exponentially expanding, the size of universe increases by a factor of 10^60. So that's what 60E foldings mean. And what it does, what this process does, is that in this picture, the size of the horizon that I plotted here, it actually exponentially expands it to something much bigger, to something that fills the whole universe. That way, different points in the universe could come actually into causal contact with each other. So it exponentially expands the size of the horizon. That was the original proposal by Alan Guth, and then Andrew Linde completed it in the 1980s. And this is one of the cornerstones of modern cosmology, is this theory of inflation that makes sense of the Big Bang theory, in particular, can make universe homogeneous the way that we see it to be. Okay? Make sense? Okay. Now, you're going to probably hear more about inflation in more detail, but as I promised, I'm not going to use any formula, so this is not going to get much more complicated than this. So inflation has been actually very successful. One thing that has been very successful at is explaining why the universe is so flat. It is a big mystery that and we're going to learn more about what omega k means and what the flattest of universe means. But basically, what it means is that if you look at constant density surfaces in our universe, they could have curvature in principle. So if you imagine the space-time, I'm not going to draw anything. That is, it probably is in there if I just explain it. If you imagine the space-time and look at the surfaces of constant cosmic density, they could have any they could be curved in principle. Now, what we found out is that their curvature is actually very small, less than 1%, based on best cosmological observation. And this has been a puzzle for a very long time, because in principle, if you have a very small curvature, it could actually blow up in time. But it turns out that it's very small, so that means that you need a very fine tuning of original curvature of these surfaces. So we're going to discuss this in more detail in a couple of days. But this is something that inflation has been able actually to solve, that it explains why the curvature of the constant density surfaces is so small. It's naturally expected from a long period of inflation. Basically, if you have 60 or 70 E-foldings of inflation. Now, the two other things are nearly Gaussian initial conditions and nearly a scale invariant and adiabatic fluctuations. So who knows what is Gaussian initial conditions? What are Gaussian fluctuations, let's say? OK, Gaussian statistics. Who's heard of it? OK, so what is Gaussian statistics?
I presume just Gaussian distribution of the fluctuations?
Gaussian distribution of the fluctuation. So, if a random variable has Gaussian probability distribution, it means that the probability of x goes as is proportional to e to the minus x squared divided by some constant. So that's Gaussian, right? Okay. So if this is one parameter, one random variable. Now, if you have a whole map of a sky, a whole map of the universe, you have infinite of these. You have a large number of these. But you can generalize this as long as your probability distribution is exponential of a quadratic combination of your random variables, e to the minus, let's say, 1/2 sigma ij inverse xi xj. This is called the Gaussian distribution. Well, so sigma ij here is a matrix. And there, in a statistical mechanics, people or probability theory, you can make arguments why this is generic probability for some processes, but not this really depends on the kind of processes that you have. It turns out that this is a very, very good description of the initial condition of the universe. That this probability distribution, this kind of probability distribution describes our universe, say, the cosmic microwave background that I showed you, to a very good accuracy. So that's the nearly Gaussian initial conditions. And nearly a scale invariant adiabatic fluctuation. Adiabatic, Hirania is going to tell you about next week. A scale invariant, it means that if you rescale our universe, statistically it looks the same. So that's a very, yes, back.
Can you explain what it is actually that's Gaussianly distributed and by Gaussian random field?
Actually anything. So it could be temperature, it could be density, it could be.
Well, for example, if I take the sphere of the sky and I pick each point to have a temperature that's distributed, I won't get anything that looks like the cosmic microwave background, because there'll be like arbitrarily high frequency components, right?
Yeah, that's true. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that you have a mean which is uniform, and that's just a number. But the fluctuations on top of the mean are Gaussian distributed. So I'm not sure what you mean by it wouldn't look like part of a background.
If I pick two points, mm-hmm. if I pick each point on the sky yeah. and have the temperature be Gaussian random at each point, yes. in general, like two points that are close to each other will have wildly different temperatures.
No, not necessarily. That's if this was a diagonal matrix. But if this is not a diagonal matrix,
oh, okay.
then it correlates different points at the far away from each other.
All right, cool.
So this is actually interesting that if you assume isotropy or homogeneity and go to the Fourier space, we can argue that this must be diagonal. But in the real space, this matrix doesn't need to be diagonal. So the very widely separated points can be correlated to each other. However, in Fourier space, if you assume isotropy or homogeneity, then this point would be independent. So that's why actually people often do this in a Fourier space. In real space, you have correlation between every point in general. So this is the current data on the Gauss. So this is supposed to show the Gaussianity. This is basically a probability distribution of temperature, which follows very well Gaussian. So this is the log of the number of the pixels of a given temperature versus temperature. And it fits very well to this parabolic distribution you expect if you take the log of this Gaussian. And then the scale invariance is amplitude as a function of the wave number. And that's also very consistent with being a constant. So this is these are all predicted more or less by inflation and seem to be all consistent with data to a very good degree. Because the inflation has been so far very successful, even though we don't understand what actually causes inflation. If you assume that there is an inflationary period, its predictions generically are consistent with this. Now, one other prediction that inflation has and hasn't been observed is gravitational waves. Although how much gravitational waves you get, that depends on your inflationary model. Some models you get a lot of gravitational waves, and some models you get very little gravitational waves. But so far, observations haven't detected gravitational waves. But maybe there is a lot of activity in the community trying to detect gravitational waves, hoping that it's big enough that it's detectable. It doesn't have to be. For certain models of inflation, it's detectable. For certain models, it's not. So physics of inflation, the idea is that there is a period where the cosmic density is roughly around 10 to the 80 grams per cubic centimeter. And this density is roughly, it's not the density of particles in the universe, but rather the density of vacuum, or almost the density of vacuum. So if the empty space has this kind of density. Now, what happens is that the universe starts exponentially expanding. Now, all the particles become irrelevant because the universe expands so much that all the particles become very, very far away from each other. And in any typical region of the universe, you don't see any particles, but you still have the vacuum. So essentially, vacuum dominates everything. The particle is so-called redshift away. Now, that's how things work in inflation. The reason it's not really, what causes this period is not really clear. So it could be a string theory or something about brains. I don't know how much, you haven't had a string theory yet, no? Okay. The so-called D-brains, that there could be something about them that causes this inflationary phase. Or maybe there is something about quantum gravity, if you understand it better, it actually causes this period of vacuum exponential expansion. But this is very uncertain. Now, the problem with quantum gravity is that quantum gravity seems to kick in at higher energies than the period, higher densities than the density at which inflation seems to be working. But they're not that far apart. But the main point is that the quantum vacuum, it's really what's responsible for what's happening. And even though everything that was there before inflation becomes irrelevant, quantum fluctuations during inflation are still present and they could cause whatever we see today. So inflation, even though it starts from vacuum, there are quantum fluctuations on top of the vacuum. And though, after inflation ends, those quantum fluctuations are what essentially are the seeds of today's galaxies and stars and clusters and everything. So the neat thing about the theory of inflation is that you don't care about the initial conditions. The quantum vacuum fluctuations are what leads to the structures that we see in the universe today. And so that's really amazing prediction from inflation, that you start from the vacuum of a quantum theory and you get everything that you see today. So this is a brief cartoon of the cosmic history as I guess I've explained in bits and pieces so far. So you have the period of Big Bang, which we don't understand very well. And right after that, you have a period of inflation, exponential expansion, very early on. And the quantum fluctuations on top of that are present and eventually lead to galaxies and stars, etc. Now, after inflation ends, there is a period that we don't know much about. But what we do know is that at some point when the universe is about 400,000 years old, its density is low enough that photons can propagate freely. So before this period, the universe is opaque to photons. After this period, the universe is transparent to photons. So from this point on, the photons can travel freely, and this is where the cosmic bark of a background is. The last scattering surface is sitting. That's what it's known as. And sometime after, when the universe is about a billion years old, you see the first stars and galaxies forming. And this is this picture. And we are sitting here, we are doing the observations when the universe is around 14 billion years old. So when you look back look at large distances, you're really looking back in time. And if you go farther and farther back, you see older and older galaxies. Yes?
Dark ages that came after the cosmic microwave background?
Yeah.
They're not visible to us?
Well, they're not visible in the sense that there are no stars there. And the photons don't just travel freely. So we don't have any, at least astrophysical, observational access to these regions. Because yeah, there, you don't have anything basically there that you could see.
And we don't even have observational access to the cosmic
microwave like it happened
before.
Yes, before that we don't have, because it's essentially like a dark surface. Like when you look at this roof, this ceiling, the exactly cosmic microwave background is exactly like a ceiling or a wall, because inside that or beyond that, it's opaque, so photons cannot travel freely. And outside it is transparent. And when you look at it, what you really see is the surface. So there are actually things that can actually propagate through this. The photons cannot. And what we can see mainly are photons. The photons basically scatter frequently before the surface, travel freely after the surface. So that means that when you look at it, the first place that you can actually see and resolve is that surface, the same way that you look at the wall. However, for example, if you manage to see neutrinos or gravitational waves, they can actually map things beyond. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to see neutrinos, because these cosmic neutrinos or gravitational waves. So far, the edge of what we can see is the cosmic microwave background. Okay? And the last thing in this plot is the so-called dark energy, that the expansion of the universe has been decelerating for a long time. So it has been accelerating during inflation, but it seems that it is also accelerating during, well, right now. Over the past 5 billion years, the cosmic expansion has started accelerating. So it's kind of puzzling that most of the time gravity is attractive, so size of the universe is increasing, but its expansion is decelerating, is slowing down. Except for these very, very early times where it was inflating, it was exponentially increasing. And right now, which you seem to have a late time period of inflation, they have very different scales. It happens very early time, very high energies, very late time, very low energies. But they have qualitatively similar behaviors. which is somewhat puzzling. So this is another mystery. This, what's the cause of this dark energy? Principle, you could have, we're starting a second period of inflation. How long that's going to last is not clear. Okay? So, now, I guess I don't have as much time as I wanted, but let's see. So it seems that cosmology is now expressing its golden era. So you have a six-parameter cosmological model, and this is what we're going to discuss over the next few days. Well, me as well as other lecturers are going to discuss this. But it seems to be a six-parameter cosmological model that can explain almost all the observations that we have of our universe, at least all the statistical observations. We cannot predict that there is going to be a galaxy at that direction, at that distance. That you cannot predict exactly from the models. What you can predict is are statistical correlations of the different quantities, like correlation functions of galaxy distributions or temperature of the microwave background. And this six-parameter model seems to be doing an excellent job of that. And I'm not going to explain, we're going to find out about what this means more in future lectures. But this is an example of comparison of data points. So these points are data of different observations from very different sources. So, for example, here you have cosmic microwave background, you have Lyman alpha forest in a spectra of quasars, you have galaxy clusters, you have weak lensing, and we're gonna hear more about what these terms mean later. Here you have these points are just fluctuations in cosmic microwave background. Both of these show the amplitude of fluctuations, how big the fluctuations are. This is in microkelvin a square because this is the temperature of the microwave background in different directions. This has a different dimension. Let's not discuss it right now. And the horizontal axis is the wave number. So the larger L means the smaller scales, or larger K here means the smaller scale. So this is literally the wave number of the fluctuations versus amplitude of fluctuations in the universe. And this other plot is for the temperatures on the sky. So the scales here are angular scales. So the larger L means smaller angles. And what this plot shows is the amplitude of fluctuations in the microwave background as a function of the wave number on the sky. And the point that I want you to take away from this is that you have a model with six parameters that can go through all these points basically as good as they can go, incredibly well. And so that's the level of success in the cosmological model right now. And this is a very recent success over the past 5 or 6 years. We didn't, all the ingredients of this model have come together essentially over the past 6 to 10 years. Before that, there have been lots of problems. Data wasn't this good, but the model wasn't this good either. Okay, so that's the level of success that we are right now. The price, of course, as I mentioned, we have all these ingredients that we have no idea about. We have dark energy, which we don't understand. We have inflation, which we don't understand. We have dark matter, which we don't understand, and so on, so forth. So I guess this is the slide I had from a different talk, but it's kind of interesting. And I guess the reason I put that is that you guys don't get disappointed that all the problems in cosmology has been solved, because they haven't. So I think 40 years ago, Lev Landau, a very famous Russian physicist, said that the cosmologists are often in error but seldom in doubt, which seems to be the status of the cosmology right now, although I guess it has been the case even back then. And this is the paper by a very famous cosmologist. Is cosmology solved? So the question is our jubilation premature, or have we really solved all the problems? So is it really Lev Landau's quotation is still correct, or maybe it says the status has really changed since back then? So let's see. So the puzzles that are still there, and they haven't been solved as successful as the models that I showed you are, is one is the dark matter, which has to do with the So the first, it's actually, as I said, it's a very old problem, and it was discovered independently by Zuiki and Vera Rubin. Vera Rubin did it in galaxies. Zuiki, much earlier, did it in galaxy clusters. And the way that it was discovered was that if you look at the velocity of stars around the center of the galaxy, it seems to have a flat rotation curve, basically. If you take look at different galaxies, look at velocity as a function of distance from the center, this is how it looks like. Now, if you take all the mass in the stars and then predict from the mass of the stars what is the velocity, what the velocity should be, this is what it looks like. This is the disk thing that I mentioned, that's written here. So it seems that there's an inconsistency between the rotation velocity of the stars predicted from their mass, the total mass of the stars within a given radius, compared to what we observe as the velocity of the stars. And this was the main argument for why there should be this other type of matter, so-called dark matter in galaxies. I guess most of you have heard about this, right? So this is the origin of dark matter. Now, it turns out that now we can actually have an independent way of measuring the mass, so-called gravitational lensing, which we might discuss later in the week. And that's consistent with this measurement, that there is indeed this other component of mass that's actually much bigger than the regular star mass in galaxies and clusters. And this is what's known as dark matter. So this is a picture of what actually a measurement of gravitational lensing looks like. If you look at a galaxy cluster, you actually see some galaxies that are elongated, like these ones, this one, this one. So you see some arcs. And you can actually, that's actually caused because of the lensing of a starlight or galaxy lights that sit on the background of a cluster of galaxies. So if you think that the fact is that photons are similar to ordinary matter, they are deflected in a gravitational field. So if you have a massive object and you have some objects in the background, the massive object is going to deflect the light of the background object. And then you can use the properties of deflected light to measure the mass of whatever object is sitting in between. So I think we're gonna discuss this later on more on Friday. But this is the way that we actually know dark matter, or an independent way of knowing that dark matter actually exists. So when do you think I should end? 5 minutes? Okay. Okay, so this is a picture of how the lensing looks like. If you have a massive object and you have some galaxies on the background, then the light is actually deflected. You can actually see multiple images of a single galaxy coming as the light is deflected by some intervening cluster. And this sounds like a cool idea, but the fact that it's observed is even cooler. So it's when we actually observe the gravitational lensing close to 20 years ago. And we actually see multiple images of galaxies of the same galaxy, indeed. Well, let's skip this. This is like an example of this gravitational lensing, but let's skip this. As to the nature of dark matter, now there has been a lot of, you might hear about this from Michael Peskin or somebody else. There has been recent claims that you have actually discovered remnants of dark matter annihilation. So in principle, you can hope to directly detect dark matter that dark matter particles passing through us right now, in principle. But you haven't been able to detect them yet. Another possibility is if dark matter particles collide with each other and annihilate to other things like electron positrons, neutrinos, photons, etc. And there have been some claims that if you look at, not this one, let's look at this one, positron fraction in the cosmic rays, you see that it goes up, and you cannot explain it by ordinary sources. So people think that the actual annihilation of dark matter, which leads to electron positron, could be responsible for this. So this is a very hot area of research right now. So maybe this is the first detection or indirect detection of dark matter through the electron positrons or the extra positron that you see in the cosmic rays. But that's this is a controversial issue so far. So people are still arguing about it. So I think I've actually underestimated how much time I have. Overestimated how much time I have. So let's see if I can skip this. So this has to do with the Hubble law. And this is what you're going to prove during this afternoon. So this afternoon you're going to prove where the Hubble law comes from, why the velocities are proportional to distance if the universe is homogeneous. And this was discovered by Hubble in the 1920s. But you're going to discuss this afternoon. And this is supposed to tell you about the cosmic acceleration, but I guess I misestimated how much time I have. Basically, if you look at the distance versus velocity of galaxies, at a small distances, they are proportional to each other. That's the Hubble law. But at large distances, it seems to be consistent with an accelerating universe, as opposed to a decelerating universe, which you expect from ordinary gravity. And this was discovered in 98, about 10 years ago. Gosh, I don't know. I have so many slides, I have no idea where. Okay. Yeah, anyway, so there's the cosmological constant problem. I told you there are 60 orders of magnitude discrepancy between prediction for dark energy and observation. Okay, so let's just skip all this. So again, I'm going to end with the cosmic mysteries. Now, I told you about Big Bang a little bit. So that's the biggest mystery so far. There is inflation. What is the fundamental theory behind it? It seems to be very successful phenomenologically, but in terms of fundamental theory, not so much. Dark matter, what is it? Baryons and galaxy formation, they didn't talk much about, but exactly where they are, that is a mystery. Understanding what happens at the horizons of black hole is a mystery also. Now, the one thing that's fascinating is that formation of black holes and dark energy happen to be more or less coincidence in cosmic time. So they essentially happened more or less in the same era. Of course, they have very different size. Dark energy affects very large scale acceleration of cosmic expansion. Black holes are very, very tiny objects. But then the question is, the fact that they happen around the same time, could they be related to each other? But then again, so these are the mysteries that we're going to discuss. And hopefully, you've written some questions that we could discuss over the coming days. Thank you. Okay.
No, I just